Now, one second. If Michael Miller doesn't come, I have something for him, so I'll give it to you. Just remind me. Also, last Monday, when you couldn't come, someone came here from what's it called? The area near East Brunswick, the other area. It's a big Jewish area. Edison. And he asked for you. You should be aware. He got all upset when he didn't see you. Does anyone know his name, the fellow who came? I know where he's from. I met him, but they give me shalom. They don't give me a name. All right, let's roll. We got a world to do. I want to welcome Mark, who delivered this beautiful kippah to me. What color is it? Is it
red?
No wonder. The Ukraine, the communists, Rafi, a lot is going on. All right, today, first of all, is Sunday, November 10th, 2019. I want to say hello to the wonderful students in front of me and to the many listening across the Jewish world. I want you to know that the email system here, the REITs, the Kollel, is down. And it's just sad to see how we're controlled by factors beyond our control. The system is not part of GRUS, it's part of YU. So we're in touch with America. It's not YU who runs it, it's some firm that runs a servicer, it's called, I think. I don't know, I don't understand, it's beyond me. But to make a long story short, no one gives a hoot about us here. And right now, for weeks now, emails that have been sent have not reached their address. So I'm just mentioning, for instance, the YU Torah occasionally gets questions on my shurim. They send them on to the office here. They're not reaching the office. You might as well send them to the Ukraine. So if anyone is listening and there's a question, YU Torah, it has to be sent for the time being to a very famous person, Yomo, Y-O-M-O 613 at gmail.com. I think it's very easy to remember, Yomo 613 at gmail.com. Now, it's amazing what we spoke about. Last week's Makori Shon, an entire article on Aryeh Kaplan. And look at the way he looks compared to what I gave out last week. Here already, a big black kippah, bearded. And it's hard to believe that this genius was rabbi of three different conservative congregations. Also, in consonance what we're talking about in class last week and today, living in the big Western world, so this is last week's Olam Katan. Is it last week or is it... No, this is last week's Olam Katan. I have a lot of heartache. I see some of these questions and what they answer. I see why kids run away from Yiddishkeit Chaim. This is not the answer I would give even in Bethel. But they're asking Rabbi Eliyahu, are you familiar with Olam Katan, first of all? If you're not familiar with it, you're not living in Israel. I always read it because my grandchildren are reading it. My great-grandchildren are reading it. I got to be able to answer their questions intelligently. So a kid asks, is it permissive to go see a movie at the theater? I'm talking about a movie, Seret Sanua Kumuvan. In Lod Sanu Ein Shela, so the kid is saying, look, if it's a sneistic movie, not something that's not sneistic. Rabbi Eliyahu answers, Uva Moshet Leitzim Lo Yashav, Umiyuchad Shaharoel Kanichmas Lakonoa Choshev Shemutav Lo Yodein Shaseret Shataroe, Hun Hinaki Vitaha, Hu Yilamed Minchala Lechet Lestratam Shel Pritzah. So I want to mention, it's not a good answer. A kid is interested in movies. There's a whole religious movie school turning out movies. There's a whole industry today. There's some movies that were turned out here that are fabulous. Ushpizin, you have TV series. All right, you tell the kid nothing is more important than learning Torah. But if you feel the movie experience is important to you, let it be done in good taste. I have to say, in this Friday's Olam Katan, I couldn't believe my eyes. They're asking, this kid is asking Rav, they take turns answering, not Rav Yochu, but Rav Avinea. He's asking Rav Avinea, he davens in a shul where women say Kaddish. Then Rav Avinea tells him, leave the shul, find another shul. I want to tell you something. If a woman is saying Kaddish, go out of your way to answer Amen to her. It shows the woman is in mourning. She feels the need to say Kaddish. The Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik said, Eidut Nemanar, a guy named Rakefet quotes it in his work, The Rav. All right, you don't want to believe the Rakefet, but at least believe the Rav. And the Rav said, Eidut Nemanar, that in Vilna, in the Gon Shtibel, there were women saying Kaddish. So in the Gon Shtibel, there are women saying Kaddish, Isaac, Ribbono Shel Olam. And you should know it means a lot to a woman if she sees you have the feeling, the mitlib, the regishut, how do you say it in English, the sensitivity,
the compassion,
it means a lot to her. I remember at the Kotel, there was a woman married to a student of mine, Loa Lena, they were both killed, husband and wife in a car crash. I recall that Chucky Bernstein and Roberta, her maiden name is Roberta Adler, I recall them fondly. Zichronim Levracha, so killed in a car crash, coming back from Eilat, there's a road to Eilat, the Aravat road that should be shut down, and if the country had any sense of Torah, they would outlaw motorcycles, bicycles, any vehicle on the road outside of a regular car. If we had a sense of Torah, but unfortunately, if we have buses on Shabbos, and people are in favor, so how do you expect them to have a sense of Torah? Chilul Shabbos, killing people, it's meaningless to someone who's not totally steeped in Torah every fiber of his body. So they were killed in that damn road. It's endless murders on that road. It's not a possible road. It's too, there's no way to pass. You think you're passing, you don't. Anyway, so she was saying Kaddish at the Kotel, standing behind the men's section, and we all answered Yehi Shmei Rabba with meaning. She came over and thanked me. I could see it meant so much to her. And I just did it out of menschlichkeit. Then there was another question, in the same thing to Rav Avinea this Friday, and a different kid asked, he davens in a shul where the women sing Lecha Dodi, and you can hear the women singing. And Rav Avinea advises him, find another shul. My dear friends, if anyone can show me a Nisar, if 101 women are singing Lecha Dodi, I haven't found it. Trekol lo mishtayu. And I'm forgetting about Rav Soloveitchik now, what I told you, and Rav David Miller. Ribbono Shel Olam, the girls are singing Lecha Dodi. Thank God the girls are singing Lecha Dodi. You understand? I suffered in Michlalar. I was very, everyone asked me, again, if you live, I'm a youngster, but I'm very old in years, and now I become a source of information. They interview me, what went on in the late 60s and the 70s. So I taught the Michlala with all the giants. The original Michlala faculty was an unbelievable faculty. You can't believe who was there in Michlala. Rav Mordechai Breuer, Rav Shlomo Minaha, Rav Yoshua Bachrach, I mean, one by one, Rav Tzvi Kanatopsky, one by one, these were Gedolei Yisrael. And so Mordechai Breuer, you had to know him to appreciate him. He was a Chevron Yeshiva boy who winds up getting an honorary doctorate from Hebrew U for his work on Masoretic text. I can't go any further now, it would take up an hour and a half to try to explain what he accomplished. But could you imagine a Chevron Yeshiva boy, I don't think he spent a day in college, and he gets an honorary doctorate from Hebrew U. So Mordechai Breuer was a character par excellence. He was he was always against the popular opinion. So he would come into the teacher's room furious. Why was he furious, Chaim? Because girls are davening in the hallway. Evidently in Germany, women didn't daven. I don't know how, maybe they said one tefillah a day. Maybe they just said Kriyat Shema al Hamita. Maybe they just said Modani. There are shittot like that. And he couldn't take that the girls were chuckling. And I said to him, Mordechai, Ashreinu shezachinu, that the girls are chuckling and davening. All right, maybe Rakefet has been groomed. He's been living in the Western world too long. He was influenced by Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. It is possible. It is possible that Mordechai Breuer is right. Rakefet is all wrong. But all I know is the Rav's daughters, Elliot, they daven three times a day. Not two and not one. Tova and Atara. So, all right. The Rav was doing something right. That's all I can say. Now, and this is what we're talking about. You live in two worlds. How much can we take of the big world? What's very interesting is what we're doing now is basically the halachic mirror of what we're doing on Monday with the rabbis Young, Goldstein, Lukstein, Drachman, etc. It's halacha, and on the other side, hashkafa. And we saw Reb Moshe with that beautiful tshuva where they ask him if you're allowed to go to the theater, to the movies, to the Yankee Stadium, to Citi Field, and I'm not talking about Citi Field for Siyum Shas, and I have to say I'm glad Yomo is davening now. I see he's not here because Yomo lives with the theory that God will take care of him. I live with the theory. I learned with Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. I mean, I hope Rabbi Yisrael is big enough for you people here. And Dov, I'm not playing games. I have a smicha directly from the mashgiach of the Rav Lesson, okay, who yet learned, got smicha from the Alta, who yet knew Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. So I'm not that far removed. And Rabbi Yisrael taught us, first you have to be mishtadel. When the ishtadel is finished, then it's bitachon. So, Yomo is always bitachon. God will take care. Everything is going to work out. And you take a look. Siyum Shas. Where is it planned for? Planned for Citi Field in the heart of winter. Tell me, Isaac, you have a guarantee there's no snow that day? You're here in Jerusalem. You're walking around. Take your sweater off. You're embarrassing the weather. Do you know what they expect Tuesday in New York? Big snowstorm. All right, let's see. So, we're not talking about going to, Scotty, we're not talking about going to Citi Field for a Siyum Shas. We're talking about going to Citi Field for a ball game. Are you allowed? Not allowed. So, Reb Moshe says clearly that the Chukotechem Lo Telechu doesn't apply. We've explained it in great detail, and it's not a Veda Zara. The problem here is one of Bitul Torah. And that problem haunts us. We can, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein wrote about it. I have a whole piece on it, and I think it's in Rechafet Aaron, Chelek Aleph, or Chelek Bet. The whole question of Bitul Torah, how do we draw the border, where do we draw the line? And this is a very individual question, the whole question of leisure activity, the whole question of escaping from reality, rejuvenating our batteries. I know my wife likes to watch ancient movies, so we'll try to watch a half hour a night, whatever. I don't enjoy these movies. Why? It's always involving death and murder and echveis love that's not the return. I want to see a movie. I want to see it so stupid, no reality, so distant from life. Ribbono shel Olam, we have enough problems in life. Listen to the news today. There is no government. There will be a government. The Chazon Treif Ivan / Avigdor Liebman. He is normal. Listen, normal. He's schizophrenic. You can't believe what went on in the weekend papers. Ribbono shel Olam. But there is something to see, a funny comedy that you laugh. Ah, oh, Fawlty Towers, fabulous. You walk away, your blood pressure is down. You understand what I'm saying? It's not a simple matter. You can't just dismiss, you got to learn, where do you draw the line? Okay, this is a serious question. Without going into any more details, I can tell you that it is well known that my Rebbe was a fan of Westerns. He loved Westerns. Cowboys and Indians, that maybe had something to do with Americanization and America and the 1800s. He loved Westerns. Okay, then Reb Moshe gets involved with the Thanksgiving question, And you see Reb Moshe's attitude that it's b'chukotekem lo talechu doesn't apply. It doesn't seem to be a holiday that is particularly Christian. It's just shevich mahodaya la kadosh baruch hu. And Reb Moshe quotes a beautiful gemara from Kedushin. That's how we ended off the shir last week. That Yanai Hamelech. I can quote the gemara again. Kedushin dap samach vaba meralef. That Yanai Hamelech halach lekuchalit shabim midbar vekivei sham shishim krachim. He scored such a big victory, and when he came back, he held, and by the way, these were fundraisers, World War I, World War II. I remember in my research coming across this all the time, that the wealthiest people were invited to the Waldorf Astoria in New York, and they served lettuce and bread, and that was it. And they paid for that meal $500 a plate. It all went to charity, to show humility. People are suffering. So Yanai Hamelech ate kress, a plain, simple vegetable. That was the Suda Todaya, to show humility before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we ate Thanksgiving to show our humility, to show our Thanksgiving. And Reb Moshe certainly seemed to be on the lenient side in what I quoted to you. In a later volume, there's much more material. And there they tell me Reb Moshe did not write it, others, and that's why I'm so hesitant to quote anything from the last few volumes. But alright, we have to assume Reb Moshe had mixed feelings. The Rav did not have mixed feelings. And I told you the story of my encounter with the Rav, where the Rav poked fun at me, and the Rav said, "What's the matter with you? Don't you know what to do?" I know his exact words. And this happened in 57, 58. "Arnold, don't you know what tomorrow is? It's Thanksgiving Day." The whole class laughed. "And I promised my wife will be at my sister at 2 o'clock. I have to catch the 12 o'clock plane. Therefore, Shir on that Thursday was 9 a.m. So a dear student wrote to me, "How do you know the Rav ate turkey? How do you know the Rav did it every year?" Gentlemen, I want to tell you, don't ask questions like that. My reaction, and everyone else in the classroom, was that the Rav celebrated Thanksgiving, period. There was a big smile on his face, and the New England patriotism came forward 100%. I can tell you even better. Let's let the cat out of the bag. You can check it out. The early 70s, when 74, whatever, the Boston Red Sox won the pennant. Does anyone remember that? And Mori Urebi had two grandsons learning here in Brisk. And he's, I don't know if it was 76, I think it was earlier. It has to be checked. Go online, check it out. What's the big deal? I have the last baseball encyclopedia I've ever published, 1994. It was this, to lift it, yeah?
67.
None,
I was at the last game.
Early 70s, take my word for it. Check it out. The Boston Red Sox, it's all online today. So Rebbe sent a telegram to his two grandsons in Brisk. We won, Zaidi. And everyone knew about the telegram. You know, it was everything had passed, word of mouth. No? So what does this tell you? You see, Ad Kedei Kach, the Rav was integrated. He was part of the Western world, all right? Nothing wrong with it. In his humble opinion, certainly as a Talmud, we live in a dual culture. The question is what we can accept, what we can't accept. And we men have that underlying problem of Beitul Torah, which you have to work out a schedule that whatever you get involved with leisure time, it doesn't interfere with your mastering Shas and Paiskim. Aaron Lichtenstein, when I eulogized him, I said about Rav Aaron that he was the only person we could talk about the 1945 World Series, the Chicago Cubs, and he knew the whole starting lineup of the Cubs. And then we get involved in a whole conversation about Phil Cavaretto. Phil Cavaretto was the first baseman, had his breakout year that year. I think he was MVP. And he was a very good example, an Italian, good family life, a real good role model. He lived the last one to die. He lived well into his 90s, with the last one of that team to still be alive. That was Reb Aaron. How did he know it so well, Chaim? Where did Reb Aaron grow up? Where are his formative years? Chicago. You know what it means to a 12-year-old kid in Chicago? The Cubs are in the World Series? Mama, wow. Okay. Now, a substitute sent me, I don't know if did it tongue-in-cheek or not, Zvi Rubenfeld from Lakewood, sent me Rabbi Avigdor Miller's opinion on this. And here, I'll tell you, I don't like to be critical of anyone. I'll tell you why. You all know that I'm not a big fan of the way, Yosef Mizrahi, Rabbi Mizrahi, that's the name, right? Mizrahi. I've told you more than once, I don't believe you're going to make people firm by telling them how many pins there are in Gehenim, Dante's Inferno. You listen to him speak. It's unbelievable. And then when he gets involved in sex, he's erotic. He makes Freud look like a prude. And I don't know, that's not the way I would speak in public. I don't know, I don't consider myself a prude, but there's a concept of tznia, etc. And there are men and women there. But he made a Talmud of mine for him. There was a fellow here in the Kollel a few years ago, Rav Avraham Rachamin. He became from through Yosef Mizrahi. So I don't say, I can't criticize. I know endless people that Avigdor Miller made from. He was fabulous. I dabbled with people who came in Aliyah. I, Rabbi Avigdor Miller, they accepted the Frumkeit, and later they matured and realized Israel is what we make of it. And they came in Aliyah, devoted Israelis 100%. But Rabbi Avigdor Miller, you know, he was Yitzchak. That's Rav. You know, you remember Moreno Rabbeinu, Rav Lesson, okay? It was Rav Lesson's son-in-law, Rav Yaakov Moshe Kain, Lesson's son-in-law. Rav Avigdor was Mashkiach in Chaim Berlin when we were growing up. Young Israel of Rugby, he was rabbi, and he's a terrific speaker. And he studied, he's a Rishivas Rabbis Chachanim product, then he went to Europe, and he became quite right-wing. At times, he could be very, very sharp. And that's not, you know, none of us know it all. And with all our sharpness, Rakefet may be very opinionated, but at the end of the day, you all know there are other opinions out there, and I greet my students, whether they're right-wing or left-wing, with the same warmth. There's freedom of choice in life. I'll talk about that at the OU, at the book launch on November 28th, Be'ezrat Hashem. So here, and this is from Rabbi Miller, questions and answers. Question, what's my opinion of Jews eating turkey on Thanksgiving? You know, I want to see the way he answers. What's my opinion of going to church on Thanksgiving? I consulted three encyclopedias that were not written by Gedolei Yisrael or not written by Kanoim either. They were written by Goyim. Each one states as follows, Thanksgiving is a church holiday. Forget about Ligahite. Forget about an American. It is a church holiday, and it is made for the purpose of going to church and holding services. And he goes on, and he says the symbol of that day, like eating turkey, is Anna. He says it's Anisha of Abazarayu the Avodah Zarah, and as a person should do everything in his power should avoid such a thing. The fact that in America you have butchers or restaurants that sell and serve kosher turkey on Thanksgiving, they are the victims of ignorance. So I have to tell you, I totally, totally disagree. It's a typical Rabbi Avigdor Miller answer where he shoots from the hip and moves very extreme. With all due respect, it's a day of thanksgiving to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have America. A Jew goes to synagogue, a Catholic goes to his church, a Protestant to his church, a Mohammedan would go to his mosque. What does it have to do with the church? It has to do with thanksgiving to God. Thanksgiving to God, you give within the context of your religion. And I can't see where that turns it into Avodah Zarah. And I have a different problem. And maybe Eliot will remember this. Goes back a long way. The early years, the school that started everything we have in Israel is BMT, Beit Medrash LaTorah. I just spoke with Chaim Herbie's grandson, Moshe. He's got a full-time job, got a real job here now. Are you aware of it? He's a Shoal Meshev. So he's not here at Shir. He's in the Beis Medrash now. I miss him as a student, but life has to move on. So I told him, you got a job? 2% of your salary goes to me. Finder's fee. Know what I'm talking about? You're a businessman, Herbie. You know what a finder's fee is. Everyone teaching here owes me 2% of their salary. The first Rebbe to show it's possible to export Torah from Jerusalem to the Anglo world. Am I right or wrong, Eliot? Okay, what made BMT put it on the map, etc., etc.? Later, the Kollels at the front. Baruch Hashem. Chaim, I never took a penny in my life. I don't touch money. Don't sell my books. Nothing. You should know. Ki'ilu. Ki'ilu. Fine. Gentlemen, early years of BMT, we were located in Rehova Barbanella. Barbanella is right in the heart of the city. I don't know what year it was. It wasn't 69, 70. The year Jackie Feigenbaum was there, Yechiel Feigenbaum, that crowd. They went to a restaurant, Mavar HaKsamim, which was 4 blocks from BMT, a 4-minute walk, and they had a big turkey dinner. And Rabbi Horowitz was furious. They missed Seder night. It was, I think, a Thursday, usually Thanksgiving. They hadn't changed the calendar. They missed the Leil Shimurim, when you stay up to learn, the Mishmanai. And Rabbi Horowitz was furious. I was furious for a different reason. You rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, the bad, surreptitious American bummies. You're in Israel. Forget about Thanksgiving Day. It's past history. But now I've grown older and more tolerant. And now I'm a little bit more learned than I was when I taught Eliot Rosner back in 71. I'm a little bit more learned. I know a Ramban. And Effie, let me tell you something. You've come in Aliyah. Have you become a Jew yet? Are you emulating your brother or remaining a pagan of idol worship in Greater Woodmere? Anyway, if you come in Aliyah, Gesundheit, celebrate Thanksgiving Day. Eli, tell him the Ramban. Hachodesh hazel lechem rosh chadashim. Eliot is Eliot. Ani is Ani. The months, Cheshvan, Kislev, use Hebrew. Remember where you came from. My children don't celebrate that. My grandchildren never heard of it. My great-grandchildren laugh in my face. But my generation, look where I came from. Look what I left. They mourned me. You don't know what went on in YU back in 69. We'll leave it for another time, Rabbi Belkin's talk and what went on. Ashreinu that we can talk about halacha and paskim lahalacha. You can absolutely celebrate Thanksgiving Day in Yerushalayim. According to the Ramban, it may be a chiyuv, and we'll leave it at that. And if we could get back in time, I would tell Rabbi Horowitz, cool it. Don't be so angry at these boys. He was really furious. It was called the Thanksgiving Massacre. You know, you had to have a sense of humor to keep them laughing. And by the way, one of the people massacred, just yesterday we hugged and kissed. I go to Mincha in my shul, 1 o'clock. He's davening for the Omer. He has an apartment nearby, Tina Kier, and he had Yerkesite. So they were mechaber him. Then the Gabbai asked me, who is that? He saw, hugged me, kissed me, dressed beautiful, tie, you know, the works, an American visiting Israel. I told him, fabulous individual, filled with Torah, inspired by his year in BMT, despite the Thanksgiving massacre. Gentlemen, we have arrived. You have never, ever seen a question like this, a tshuva like this, and I got news for you. Even Reb Menashe Klein as Americanized. His knowledge of English, superb. Where's the tshuva? Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Vav, Siman Reish Ayin. And he gets the question. He gets the question, are you allowed to go to the racetrack and watch a horse race? And how do I know he's Americanized? He gets the question, Lirot Shokamim Kishemarim Umeiritzim Etasusim, racetrack, Blaz, in the Tshuva. There it is. Beautiful Hebrew. Mom, they're betting. They're yelling. You know, you see this in the movies. I've never been to a race, but I understand. Screaming car, come on. What? And every Hollywood movie, one out of two, you see a race, somehow they get involved. And all the big racetracks in New York built by Jews. Belmont, you know the story. There was a German Jew. He went upstate and he wanted to go into a hotel. And they said to him, no Jews or dogs allowed in. On the spot, he bought the hotel, and he owned it. He owned it. I don't have to tell you, Jews were more than welcome. He built Belmont Racetrack, Jewish money, Jews running, racing. And are you allowed? And he says, the Kurimlo horse races, and here too, Belaz, horse race, Belaz. Wow, racetrack, horse race, allowed. No, what's the makar? I learned it with the Rav, Masachet Bekuvya. We're talking about the whole Sugyan Sanhedrin, Pei Gimel, Mishneh Gimel, Psulei Eidot. Who is kosherly Eidot? If a person's a thief, he's not kosher. Why not? Because you hold very well. If he can rob money, he'll testify falsely. It's a fadabnkeit. It's part of a whole personality. This is why I tell you in parentheses, as liberal as I am and open-minded, Agudat Yisrael is a tragic story because they educate their kids to be dishonest. It's built into the system. Can anyone tell me what I'm talking about? We're talking Agudat Yisrael. They don't take a sab in Memshelet Yisrael, skamsa. Why don't they take a sar? They don't want to be responsible for the tafras, the chilul Shabbos, the bilat asura, all that goes on by the Jews in Israel. So don't make me a sar. So it's a farce. You take the title skan sar with all the authority of a sar, but you make believe you're not a sar. You're teaching children at a very young age double talk. You're teaching children at a very young age to pull shtick like that. To lie. It's very sad. More than that, when the cabinet sits and has to make a decision whether the state of Israel will have buses on Shabbos, whether all the food stores will be open on Shabbos, they don't vote. They don't participate. They're not sarim. They're only skansa. You understand what I'm saying? It's very upsetting to me. But Mesachek Bekuvya, you with me, Michael? Michael, political survival, of course, are permitted. I'm not mad at Netanyahu, I'm mad at them.
If they were permitted, they would back down.
I don't think you're right. You don't know what you're dealing
with. You're not going to be in the coalition because
I hope you're right. But I've been here too long to watch what goes on, and that's Yiddishkeit. That's honesty. That's a verdorbenkeit. It's like God scroll lying in history volumes. When you teach a person to lie, you have put it into his body that lying is permissible for the sake of whitewashing the fact that Yeshiva University exists. You understand? Yeshiva University exists. Pro-con, you can be critical, absolutely. But to redo history? Wow. All right, that's my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It's a verdorbenkeit. I don't know what that means in English, but let it stand. Anyway, I love this tshuva. I can't believe it. Can you go to the racetrack? Now, who remembers the sugya of Mesachek Bekuvya? First of all, what's wrong? What's wrong? This is the whole problem of asmachta. What does asmachta mean? Look, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel, my dear student, Mark Wiener. Mark, were you my student in New York, too?
in the summers when you...
The summers, but no, you're not in the 60s. That's before your time. Because the earliest of BMT, I had kids who studied with me in the late 60s and then in Israel. So Mark says, we're going to make a bet. All right? We're going to make a bet. Where the trim, this kippah was given to me this morning by Mark, and it's not, I wear a bigger kippah, I'm not ashamed of my kippah. Whenever you ask me how big does the kippah have to be, you know how much it's written on this? Reb Moshe has to do it. There are two volumes upstairs in the upstairs library, about 700 pages on a kippah. I can't believe my eyes. Gentlemen, I can give you all the halakhot on kippah and fill half a paragraph. But 700 sign of our times. But if anyone asks me how big a kippah should be, my answer is very simple. Big enough that people should see you wearing a kippah. Okay? I don't want someone to come in with a bottle cap and he said, well, what do you mean, Rebbe? I'm wearing a Coca-Cola bottle cap here. So Mark gave me this. So we're going to bet. We're going to bet for the sake of argument on the Yankees next year. We'll wait till next year. Okay? So Mark says they're going to win. I say, no, they're not going to win. $100. Is that bet legitimate? In other words, Mark wins. I give him $100. Is he robbing me or not? In other words, what does Asmachta mean? When I made the bet, did I really felt I'm going to win? I never dreamt I would have to give him $100. Asmachta lo kanya. It's one of the problems with the ketuvah. I don't want to do with the RCA ketuvah. You understand what I'm saying? The whole question. You're putting restrictions on the chatan, or the kalim as well, whoever won't give a get, receive a get. In Israel it works both ways, I don't know in America. But the chatan, he never dreamt the kalim's going to walk out on him. He never dreamt the kalim's going to demand a divorce. He never really obligated. This is the question, l'smachta lo kanya. So when you have mesachek b'kuvya, when you're playing cards, when you're gambling, when you're in Las Vegas... They're robbing you. You put $10 down, you put $100 down, you don't dream you're going to lose, you think you're going to win. This is the whole question of gambling. So the Mishnah and the Sugya there reaches a conclusion that if this is your sole form of living, that you're a Luftmensch, that all you do is gamble, you are absolutely puzzled to aid it because you're a thief full time. If it's only once in a while that you gamble, you can't say it's a full-time thief. Well, once in a while he's doing something which may be wrong because asmachta lo kanya. An asmachta doesn't give... chiyuv, that you really made up your mind you're going to lose the money. But you're kashli eidot, it's only part time. So it could very well be that going to watch horse racing, alright, you're gambling. Do you do it full time? Is this your profession? Are you Nathan Detroit? Is this what you make a living? No one even knows who Nathan Detroit is today. So I said, Rafi, do you know Nathan Detroit? Oh my gosh, you see how old we are? No, Nathan Detroit, what do you say? Not a guess. Why didn't you stop me there? Guys and Dolls. Have you ever seen the movie Guys and Dolls? Treat yourself to an unbelievable movie and the fat guy singing. What was his name? Anyone remember? The chubby guy singing. You know who he is? A Chazan's son. All these great, Al Jolson, all these people who knew how to sing so beautifully. Chazan's son, that's how they knew how to sing. They knew how to do Kol Nidre. You all know that. Ah, but we lost to assimilation. Where do you draw the line? That question haunts us. Anyway, Nathan Detroit, that's Frank Sinatra. He is a full-time gambler. He is puzzled to aid it. But if you go to the horse races once in a while, it would seem that we could be mata. Could be. You know, he's developing the idea. Then he finds a tshuva from the late Rishonic period, the Marie Brunitz Germany for late Rishonic period. And believe it or not, he was asked this very question. Now, they didn't have horse racing. They had sportsmen on riding horses, and they were holding, what would you call them? The poles in their hands. What word do you say?
Spear.
Huh? A spear. I don't know if it's a spear. A lancelet or something. There's a technical word for it. What word do you say? A ballot?
Mallet.
Mallet. A mallet. M-A-L-L-O-T. I've seen pictures. And they would sport with each other. So the Marie Brunner says it could very well be a positive experience because you learn how to defend yourself when riding a horse. Okay, what he's saying at that time, well, evidently riding horses was not that uncommon. They didn't have cars. It was a form of transportation. People attacked you. You had to know how to fight back. So, Menashe Klein says, all right, he was Matia. But he says, I quote, I don't believe going to horse racing today teaches you how to defend yourself because we don't ride horses. We don't have to defend ourselves. It's not what was 800, 900, or the 700, 800 years ago. Very, very interesting tshuva. And he goes on and on that, yes, it's an entire profession today. People buy horses. People train horses. People do it for the sake of enjoyment, for schok. It could very well be that if you don't spend all your time at the racetracks and it's not your full-time profession, it could very well be that it may be permissible. And he's not happy about it because it's schok, it's late sunnet, but to find the concrete isa, he doesn't find it. What it all comes back to is Beitul Torah. And that is haunting in every tshuva of this type. And in Israel, recently an entire volume was written on leisure time. And men suffer from Beitul Torah. Women are fortunate. They can learn all the Torah in the world today if they want to. Underline the word if they want to. But Dov, your father, pushed it at you. He had no choice. You're chayev. You're obligated. This is the difference. Where do we draw the line? A side comment, a very sad comment. The building you're sitting in, Mr. Joe Gris and Caroline Gris built this building. Some of you know the story. Some of you have read Washington. Mr. Gris was very successful in America. He and his brother Oscar. Oscar remained totally from in America. Was one of the Rav's key balabatim in Maria. Joe Gris didn't remain from. The shul he didn't daven in was Orthodox, but he fell by the wayside. There was a problem in his family. He came to his brother Oscar crying. Oscar took him to the Rav. The Rav took him to the Rebbetzin. And the Rebbetzin was able to help. Mr. Gris became very indebted to the Rav. You can read more details in Washington. Mr. Gris said to me, standing right outside this building, when I die, I don't want to have a penny left to my name. I want it all to be in Jewish education, Torah education. Don't want people to have the problems I had with my children. I took care of my children. They already have enough money. And as you know, Mr. Gris did wonders in Israel. If you go to Borough Park, you'll see his name all over. He established pensions for Malamdin and all the yeshivas, right-wing yeshivas, etc. I remember when YU, you think there was always a pension. It began when I was teaching there in the early 60s. It was like D-Day, something so dramatic that every Rebbe will now have a pension teaching in YU. It was mamish, frontline news. And Mr. Gris has a daughter, a son. The son, you know where his money goes? The Gris Foundation, America, horse racing. He has built a hospital for horses that raise. He raises horses that will raise. You have to raise them. You have to feed them properly. You have to train them properly. So you see the sadness here. Where do you draw the line? All right. It's a reality. Let me come to the last paragraph, which hits home. And while I'm talking about horse racing, and while I feel it's better not to be involved with it, Beitel Torah, he says the same thing. People who go to watch Mishakim B'Kadur, ball play, Blaz. Beitel Torah, and acting like Goyim, Moshe Leitzim. And he says, not just going to the ballpark, TV, radio, watch here all these programs, even though it's not Moshe Leitzim, you're at home. Moshe Leitzim at the stadium. Joe DiMaggio getting up to bat, 60,000 people sitting there, yelling, standing, cheering. Myself included. That's Moshe Leitzim. But at home, TV, Rafi, no one else is there, right or wrong? What's so wrong? And nevertheless, there's Beitel Torah, and absolutely you shouldn't be involved in these things, even if you can find the heter. Asa mishum Beitel Torah. Lachain kol misha yirat Hashem nogeya b'levavo yichak mehem. And here I want to tell you a very interesting story. Right, this is Reb Menashe Klein, it's Reb Moshe Feinstein. These problems come up, they haunt us. Dual culture. Tell you two stories. One that I'm not an eyewitness to, but it's made the rounds and it's been published. The mid-70s, the Rav gave shiur 3 times a week. In my time, it was 2 times a week. In the mid-70s, it was 3 times, but the shiur was not as long. In my time, a shiur could be 2.5 hours, 3 hours. The mid-70s, it was a different system, 2 hours, 3 times a week. Not only that, the Rav was not in a rush to go anywhere in the mid-70s. It's not like he flew in on Tuesday morning and flew out Wednesday afternoon. Or his wife, and I still remember the earlier period where his wife drove him in on Monday and they drove back on Thursday. Later he came, he was too busy in Boston, flew. It's a different story. I still remember the black Dodge parked on Amsterdam Avenue in front of the yeshiva. So he wasn't in a rush. And one time, it was one of these days, Super Sunday, whatever they call it, the biggest football game. Super Sunday. Super Bowl Sunday. The biggest football game of the week, of the year. Like the World Series.
Bigger.
And the Rebbe is giving shiur that day. And the guys, he's going on 2 hours, 2.5 hours. The shiur should have been over by 1 o'clock by the time. And he's going, and the class is getting very restless. And he's struggling. You know, the Rebbe shiur is not like the shiur. What you hear here, I'm coming in prepared, and I know what I want to say. And more or less, everything is developed 90% before I walk into class. The Rebbe is dealing with a sugya. You're working it out. You're working it out together with him. He has a general idea which way he's going. But he's working and he's struggling now. And he sees the class is restless and finally he says, okay, go watch the bowl game. And he closes the Gemara, dismisses the class. So, you see, he's already in a slightly different world. But now I want to tell you a very... Yes, Michael.
interesting comment with bingo in terms of gambling.
Yeah.
The conservative movement banned it.
Right.
And Orthodoxy permitted it.
Well, not permitted, but many shuls. Many shuls did it. It was Pikuach Nefesh. It was a fundraiser. Goyim used to come into the Young Israels and gamble, and then never. We got to be thankful we pay taxes here, and shuls are supported by the government. If Rakefin had his way, all hashgacha would be paid for by the government. No money would change hands privately. You need a mashgiach, you apply to the rabbinate sends a mashgiach, nothing to do with them, with you, with him, an honest person, he's the mashgiach, period. But we're lucky, the government here, in the shul I'm in, there's never been an appeal. All right, when I get an aliyah, I always give 50 shekel, I see others give 20, others give 100, Baruch Hashem. Anyway, coming back here, I want to tell you a very serious story that has tremendous implication for the young people here going into Chinuch. Dov and I and all the rabbis here, we're past our prime. So this story, but it's an important story. You see, the story with Israel, with America, you all know from my Monday class, I've spent so many years in the history of Torah in the United States. Why was there no success in the 1800s? Because the Rebbeim were not Americanized. They didn't speak the same language as the youngsters. It took a long time for Yeshivas Chachanim to go on the map, for IJJ to go on the map, for Torah V'Das to go on the map. You needed people that the students could relate to. This is why the Rav learned baseball. You know the story I write this in Washington. If not, I've told it so many times. That's an absolute true story. Mo Berlin, my dear friend, Zichrono Livracha, is a year ahead of me in school. So Mo Berlin lived in Boston for quite a few years before he came in Aliyah. He had a master's in hospital administration. He ran a hospital, very capable. Here he ran the Rothschild Foundation, then he took ill. So sad. His last years were very sad. His grandchildren are friendly with my grandchildren. We interact. One day in Maimonides, in the late 60s, mid-60s, the Rav says to Mo, sit down, there's a tradition between Mincha and Marav, teach me baseball. So Mo starts teaching the Rav baseball, first, second, third, home plate, runs, three strikes, four balls. No, within 20 minutes, the Rav already is a bucky in baseball. So then Mo gets up nerve and he says, Rebbe, I'm shuldig, forgive me. What stuff the Rav can in us? Well, why does the Rav have to know this? And the Rav looks at him with that angelic smile that he looked at me with Thanksgiving Day and says, Meshulah, Meshulah, my grandchildren are coming for Shabbos. I have to have something to talk with them about. You follow? So the Rav, you understand, it's important. YU has had some terrible scandals that came to light recently. I don't want to talk about it publicly because I know the people involved very well. But I did my own research. I have contacts. Baruch Hashem. I've taught so many thousands upon thousands of students. And some of them are in positions of influence and understanding and have succeeded. So Ellie, Richard Joel asked me, Nura Baran, what's your conclusion? So I told him my conclusion. I said, one is guilty as charged. And one just was showing off. What's Pshat showing off? When you're involved with high school kids look at you. The Rebbe's a tzaddik, he's from a different world, he was born out of Yetzirah. Very important to show the kids that you would like them, you're one of the boys, and yet you mastered life and mastered Torah and mastered Yiret Shemayim.
So,
hold on, Yitzchak. Yitzchak, relax. So I said, one of the people involved who's accused of doing what he did, wrestling, I said, I don't think there was criminal context. I think he wanted to show. He's one of the boys. He knows how to wrestle. He knows how to... I said, it's a terrible thing to do. It shows lack of seichel. But how did I prove I'm one of the boys when I taught in YU in the 60s? My baseball knowledge? No one challenged me on the Maggio, Musial, Williams, we punished Greenberg, Hagadolim Shebaharetz. Wow! The Rebbe can know so much baseball and yet want to master all of Shas and Paiskim. He's a good role model. Something to be said here. Now, in order to achieve this, you have to be able to understand who you are and where you are and what you're with. Okay, by the way, to end off that story, Richard Gell said to me, "Darn it, you could have saved me a few million dollars." He said he called in a high ribbon commission and they did all this research and their conclusion was exactly what I told him. I said, "Richard, I couldn't have saved you anything because you're going to say Rakefa came up with these conclusions. Say, what a moron, what an idiot, what an Oisbach, what a Trumpenik, what a Pushtak. What the heck does he know what he's talking about, Yevon Shtupan?" You hire a high-level committee with psychologists and sociologists and who knows what. Oh, they give a report. That report is worth a few million dollars. All right. I got to tell you, as Yitzchak just sparked at me, a lot of people disagree with this conclusion, including my own Talmidim. So I don't know where the truth is today. I stand without an opinion, very hurt, very crying, very upset, because these are people I know and knew since the 1940s on. But all right, this is life. I have other problems with life too. There's another scandal. A guy faces 80 years in jail. They're going to sentence him shortly. And this maneuver used to give me mussa every time we met that I'm not from enough. I didn't go right wing. He's giving me mussa from, I think it is New Haven. So all right, this is life. Gentlemen, listen to me very carefully. Took a long time to develop a Rebbe in America. You go to Lakewood now, all of Lakewood is in English. In English. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, when I learned in Lakewood, if you said a word in English, they threw you out head first. Who knows a Goyish language? English? Wow. It's a different world. Americanizes today. Listen to what happened here in Israel. And this happened exactly where Eliot went to school, Rehov HaBavanel. Remember the building? All right, so there was a meeting. What did BMT do? When we got started, it showed that American kids, Anglo kids, want to learn Torah, but they need it in English. So by the early 70s, there were other imitations of BMT. And now we have a meeting in BMT. I just can see it doesn't stand. This building's not standing anymore. It's built beautiful building now. I can just see in that main room where the Aron Kodesh was, you have a few. Among the people there is the Rosh Yeshiva of Shalavim. I don't want to mention his name. Should live and be well. And we're discussing how to educate American kids. And he says, these kids are terrible. Seder ends with lunch at 1 o'clock. We don't start up again till 4 o'clock. They listen to the radio. And he started to imitate them, listening to music and shaking. And I looked at him. These are kids that were raised. That's their culture. You can't expect them to be like Israeli kids. It's two different cultures. Very important to understand the culture. What Rav Menashe Klein says here, yes, in theory he's right. Moshav Leitzim, I'm not so sure Bopak is Moshav Leitzim, but it's not exactly a Beis Medrash, a shtibble. Everyone is sitting there cursing, yelling, shouting, the beer until the seventh inning, they sell beer. I mean, that's not exactly the experience of Kedusha Vitara. But American kids go to ballparks. American kids. Who doesn't hear the radio? How many times I've gotten the shaila if I'm driving during the 9 days, am I allowed to listen to music? It calms my mind while I'm driving. You probably can be matir. They say the rav is matir. That's why you're listening, so you should drive better. But you have to understand the mentality. This is so critically important. When you come to the state of Israel, took many years to develop mechanchim who can reach out to the kids who from the age of 13, all they're thinking about is what they're going to do in the army. Remember, I raised many grandsons here. By the way, I had my first grandson, career officer. My first grandson. And he was assigned to the same unit as his father, my eldest son-in-law, who was in the army more than 20 years. The same unit. And he said, people saw the name and they got excited. I said, who remembers your father? He's out of the army well over 10 years or more. It's a whole new career. They still remembered the name. People were still there. So Baruch Hashem, you got how to relate to these kids. I can tell you in my own life, in 71, when I went back to teaching full time, they got in touch with me from a high school in Bayit Vagan, pleading with me to give the top shiur of Gemara. And I told them I can't do it. I can't do it for two reasons. I said, one, I want to teach more on a higher level in high school. I don't have any discipline problems. Two, I don't know the mentality. I think I told you when the army, I saw right away the first lecture I gave. Remember what I thought? They laughed at my accent. So then already I was smart enough to turn it around. Wow. The minute I use, remember I explained to you the word tafran. Oh, wow, this American dummy knows tafran. We got to listen to him. He may have something to tell us. But you see, that is so important. If I show this tshuva to the average American kid, he would laugh, walk away laughing. The radio, what's wrong with the radio? The punish alayim. Now you should know, that Rosh Yeshiva over the years, I think he developed a lot more sensitivity to an American kid where he's coming from. We grew up, I mean, I don't know your generation, my generation, television and radio and baseball, and with it all, I encountered in seventh grade already Senpo Sugihara's salvation, the mirror that the Shanghai crowd, my whole life changed. Didn't mean I gave up television, didn't mean I gave up baseball, didn't mean I gave up the radio, but my whole life changed. And this is so crucially important. And I can say this now to the older people here. We have to understand our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, they have their own values. We can't superimpose the way we were raised upon them. And I can tell you incidents here with parents, with children, with shidduchim. These kids have different, a different world, a different culture. My best story is, I had an upsharing of a great-grandson a few years ago, and his older brother is sitting in a corner. It's my eldest great-grandson. His picture is in my office, first of Baruch Hashem, many, many, many. And he's looking at his iPod. My great-grandson knows more than I do about that little monster. He's looking. I said, what are you looking at, Mom? What time is Fakel? He's watching a soccer game. I saw this kid so happy. Remember what I told you? So I said, baseball. So he showed me, he knows how to, he said, oh, he showed me how you hit, how you pitch. I couldn't believe it. I said, about Tagidli, Mayote Hashuv, Lumot Torah, or Lisachek Kadurregel. Gave me that angelic look, Saba Betach Lumotara, Zahabeyo Techashub. Avochutz Lukita Mutali Lesachek. I said to him in his modern Hebrew, Im Hachuva Hazot Kanita Oti. You bought me. Get that expression? What do you want? Take out your wallet, tell the kid anything. And now let me go a step further. We're going Meinyan Linyan. But a little bit different. The Jew, life, interaction, we're not a people unto ourselves.
What about the question you raised last week? If there's no Nesora, then the turkey is kosher.
Some people don't eat turkey. What can I tell you? The Ashkenazim need a Nesora. No two ways about it. The Rav obviously ate turkey. And here in Israel, if you don't eat turkey, you'll starve. But there was a new type of chicken they brought in. It's a few years ago. It was a tremendous machloket here about that new chicken. Anyone recall what they called it? It has a different name.
Is this part of the swing to always look for machlokas?
Look, there are two people out of Efrat, Greenspan and Zivotofsky. I taught the Greenspan's, let me just figure out, I taught his sister, I taught his brother-in-law. It's, you know who it is. It's Doc Greenspan, it's Alan's son. And Zivotofsky is a professor at Bar-Ilan. These are not dummies. They have come up with meals. You have to pay a fortune. It's under the hashgacha of the OU. With every type of that you would never dream in 100 years, how many chocolate-covered locusts have you had, Rabbi Reuben, recently? You understand? Chocolate-covered locusts. What's wrong with it?
A giraffe, a buffalo
already is, you can get it all over America. All you have to do is be willing to pay heavy money. There's very healthy meat. They say it's healthier than cows. So evidently they've gone out of the way to record Mesorot. The question with turkey gets very involved. Maybe it's just a form of poultry. Maybe we don't need a separate Mesorah on every type of turkey. You follow every type of poultry. It's all part of the general concept of poultry. But halacha lemaisa, I know in America there was a large literature of people who were machmir, people who were mekil. Halacha lemaisa today, certainly in the state of Israel, I've yet to meet anyone who doesn't eat turkey. Here it seems there was a Mesorah, people always had turkey, or people in Poland had turkey, and they claim that those people brought the turkey here. So here there's no problem. The pilgrims, did they bring turkey to America? Were there any Jews among the pilgrims, etc.? It's an interesting question, but if the Mesorah existed in Poland, then it can carry over to America. We're the same Jews, we have the same blood in our body as our forebears. Halacha lemaisa, turkey is considered healthier than meat or even chicken. Turkey is considered healthier. Okay, I don't want to go further. You know what's going on with Rav Kook's people? They claim we should all be vegetarians, right or wrong. Rav Kook felt that it was a breakdown of compromise with humans, with Noach, that God permitted them to have meat. But originally in the ideal civilization with Adam, you weren't permitted meat, just vegetables and fruits, etc. And take a look. Health-wise, I just saw articles in all the Israeli press that meat is not good for you, meat is not healthier, the less meat you eat, particularly the red meat, etc. What Jews are famous for, Second Avenue delicatessen, shishkacha shkacha, right? No one accepts the shkacha, but imagine, it's a sign of the times that even the goyish Jews know a little bit it should be kosher. Oh, you remember Shmulka Bernstein's, which had good hashkacha? You remember those thick corned beef sandwiches? Your mouth waters when you think of it. Today we know you're killing yourself. Every corned beef sandwich is 1 month off your life. Back here, gentlemen. Ellie, very, very serious now. Regards to your wife and the rest of the family. And I'm still waiting to hear that I'm going to have total success with some parts of the family, and I'm looking at the younger ones, not the older ones. My dear friends, what I'm about to say is crucially important, and I hope everyone listening will spread this word, and I hope many people in Israel are listening. And this is at the heart of Yiddishkeit. And we have totally, totally failed. Our Rabbeim, HaMachanchem, maybe they don't know themselves what Yiddishkeit is about. We're challenged by the Western world. The Western world teaches democracy. The Western world, I'll tell you one little story. I think I've written this up as well, or spoken about it many times. How many of you know world history? Alsace-Lorraine. Effie, you know how many wars were fought over Alsace-Lorraine? Do you know how many millions of people died? Let's take World War I. Christmas, they would call a truce. Germans and French played soccer with each other on the battlefields. We have memoir literature. It's 100 years ago. It's not ancient history. 2 days later, they were killing each other. Christian killing Christian. This is a Protestant or Christian concept. It's a Muslim concept. I guarantee you today, in some part of the world, Muslims are killing Muslims. Understatement, fine. Well, what does it mean? Well, let's take French and German. Christians killing Christians. They went to church on Christmas Day. I'm an American, you're a German, you're a Frenchman. Religion is purely a personal, individualistic matter. I'm a Christian, I go to church. But I'm an American. We Jews, can anyone tell me why Aaron Rakefet is sitting here? Can anyone tell me why Chaim Sabato, the famous Rabbi Sabato, we both wrote the same things, published the same stories, two different stories, the same concept? No? Tell me, who read Washington? Effie, what page are you up to?
I think
15. 15, you're not there yet. Ellie, where are you up to?
Around 30.
30, Baruch Hashem, a horse race. Can I know?
Do
we want to
bet on who's going to first?
We're not betting. I don't want to lose money on a smachta. I want to be kosherly yaitet, l'chol adeyot. Chaim, let me tell you what happened to me in 1944. All we were talking about was D-Day. Everyone knew America's planning a big invasion. My father had maps up in the house. He was following, mapping it off. WOR. You sent a letter, they sent you maps. You didn't have to pay for it. Map of Europe. Okay. So we come into class. I don't know what grade I was in, 44. I don't know. I was born 37. Figure it out. Third grade, fourth grade. Mr. Markowitz is our teacher. And he looks at the class, and he's a man in his 50s. He says, "And you fellas, you know, you think I'm an old man. All you're talking about is the war. I fought in World War I for Russia." And then he told us a story, and that story changed my life, plain and simple. Story was a daily happening. He was on the Russian front. The kid is 17. His friend was a Jewish kid with him. And they were shooting at the Germans. And his friend hits a German soldier. The guy drops the rifle and shouts, "Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad." And he died. My friend went out of his mind. He committed suicide or died 2 days later in a Russian field hospital that a Jew had killed the child. Mark, this story introduces you to what I can talk about from now for the next 7 years. As a Jew, you have a double commitment. You have one commitment that stems from the Kritat Brit with Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov that you read about Shabbat. That's an individual. We're individuals. We're no different than a Christian, a Muslim. We're Jews. With Matan Torah, we develop a concept of peoplehood. Eretz Yisrael is given to a people. Torah is given to a people. Korban Pesach becomes essential before Yetziat Mitzrayim, so that we learn thousands of Jews share one Korban Pesach. Ochalala Soveya. You only had to have one kizayat. You had no room. You had finished the big feast before. One kizayat, the afikoman. Figure out how many people could share one set. And Josephus describes hundreds. The Gemara describes three times they came in when they were into the Beis Hamikdash, the Shechita, hundreds of thousands. How many Kabbalah did you know? But it's Am Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael. You have a dual responsibility. No other religion in the world has this concept. And many Jews today do not know the first thing about this concept, including from Jews in Israel. We are Christian Jews, Protestant Jews. I'm a wonderful Jew. I'm Shomer Shabbos. I only eat kosher. I observe Tarat Mishpacha. A wonderful Jew. It's not enough. That's on a personal level, as a Christian. Good, he's a Christian, he's a Muslim, you're a Jew. But there's a second obligation. The community, the public thoroughfare. Am Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael. And this reflects. I quote to you, these weekend papers aggravate me no end, but I have to go through them to see what's going on in the world. Here's an interview with someone named Akiva Bigman, 37, married, 4 children, lives B'Kfar Rabkamim in the Negev, born in America, came in Aliyah at the age of 3 with his parents, went to Kibbutz Shluchot, then Haifa where he grew up. What a beautiful resume. And then they ask him, what do you think about buses on Shabbos? It's a frum guy, everything he answers. Hatzibur habe yotel liberali benosei daka medina me'asher ha'miflagot hadatiyot. What you see there is pure lack of understanding what Torah is about. He's 50% of the way, not 100%. Do you understand what you just heard? He's a good Christian. I'm a good Jew. Freedom of choice. Personal matter. They want to drive a bus on Shabbos? Let them do what they want. I go to shul. He goes to the beach. It's a total breakdown of who we are, what we are. Let me go further, Michael. 1 second. What's our right to this land? What's our right? How do we have the right to fight, to kill Arabs? Because we're the continuity of the Jewish people. And the continuity of the Jewish people means Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, on a public level. It's not that we force anyone. You can do whatever you want in your house. But the democratic concept, the Western concept, the non-Jewish concept of religion as a personal matter is only 50% applicable when it comes to the concept of being a Jew. And this is crucially important if you want to understand what Yiddishkeit is about. How can a frum Jew be part of a party that puts on its platform a secular state, a liberal state? How can a frum Jew and their people, Kachol Lavan, this is a Gerech Hasida, and this is a, someone who lives in right down the hallway from here, Givat Mordechai, someone who grew up a few blocks from me, they're frum Jews 100%. They don't know what 50% of Yiddishkeit is about. And this is crucial. And what's amazing is the founders of the Zionism, as irreligious as they were on a personal level, still knew what Yiddishkeit was about on a public level. It was a different generation. Tel Aviv had no public Chilul Shabbos by decision of people who were far from Torah and Yirat Shemayim and commitment and surrender and all that we believe in. Dizengoff davened in a shul Shabbos, went to shul, Chas v'chalila, Bialik, Haraam, no public transportation. Today, the youth raised 4 generations later doesn't know Aleph Bet of Yiddishkeit. Not a word. All they know is America, Western world, freedom of religion. I'm not interfering with you, Rabbi Rakefet. I love you. I respect you. But please, don't interfere with me. You go to shul, and I get on a bus and go to the beach. Freedom of choice. This is crucially important, and I'm going to show you how it reflects in the halacha. But I want to say something else before I end. If you think I'm just talking in theory, let me tell you something. Tomorrow morning, there's some different people in the shul. One of them is Mori Tarrigan, Professor Mori Tarrigan. I trust you've heard the name. If you haven't, let the ignorant pass for the wise. Make believe you did. All right? He was with Rehovot, vice minister, many years. I think it's by 67, they kick you out. It's like the army system. If I'd be in the army, I wouldn't be allowed to teach anymore. My brother can't do operations. He's over 70, had to give up his practice, etc. All right, there's something to be said for it. Fresh blood. I don't know in the classroom if you can say the same thing. If you have, could you imagine telling Rabbi Soloveitchik, you're over 67, out. Thank God, if our Rabbeim have something to give us, we love them. We kiss their hands. They connect us to yesteryear. Pleitach sofreihem. So let me tell you something. Mori Davins moved to Yerushalayim. One of the reasons he moved is to be closer to Gris when he retired. He's come to Shia many years. He's a friendly guy. And in his shul, some Russian professor walks in here on a sabbatical, extending it. An older man, not a youngster. Not in my age range, maybe not Mori, but a little younger. And Mori introduces him to me. We get to meet, we have dinner at Morty's house Friday night, okay. And this man couldn't believe what Malka and I did in the 80s. How did you do it? How did you risk your life? How did you care so much about Russian Jews? Who are they to you, basically? We didn't have any relatives there. This is exactly Am Yisrael. Look at Rakepit quoting the Rav, where the Rav talks about Am Yisrael. Amcha Beit Yisrael from Al HaNisim. When a Jew hurts in Russia, it hurts the Jew in the United States as well. If you take a look what we achieved bringing down the Soviet Empire, and the whole operation. Who were the activists? Wherever you turned, all you saw were kippot. All you saw were from Jews. Triple SJ. I quoted this concept from my student, Adam Furziker, Professor Furziker, in the Monday class. It brought the Orthodox rabbis to the forefront of the American rabbinate. Israel, I still remember the day that they were going to be sentenced, the Leningrad hijackers, the airplane, Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich and all those with him, tremendous demonstration in the center of Jerusalem. And then we marched to the Kotel, and at the Kotel, the news came through, two got the death sentence, 15 years in jail, each one what the sentences were, and I remember the mob scene, the shaking, Am Yisrael. And let me end off. I've lived in Israel now 50 plus years. A Yovel is a Yovel. We don't go beyond that. A Yovel, you've achieved the maximum. All right, my accent hasn't disappeared. And some of my American understanding, even a liberal attitude towards Thanksgiving Day, and I've come so far as 50 years after my encounter in the Chovar Babanel with the Thanksgiving massacre, Adarava, celebrate Thanksgiving. Let your children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren know where you came from, what you chose. Miratzonchem hatov lavot atzah kol mibiyut uberina. And let me tell you something. This entire feeling, why we sacrificed, why we did, why we acted, because these are Jews. This is Am Yisrael. This is not on your personal level. This is on your communal level. Jews in Russia are suffering, then we cannot relax here. And I always tell people who ask me that very question that this Russian Jew asked me, I said, I still remember riding on the subway with my father, the Third Avenue well. It was not underground, it was above ground, subsequently taken down. I remember riding with my father in the Bronx, and I was old enough to ask my father, how can we be so relaxed? Is as we sit here, who knows how many thousands of Jews are being executed in Eastern Europe, Western Europe. God have mercy. And my father answered me, what can we do? Our hands are tied. And boy, were our hands tied. Could you imagine? Roosevelt never bombed the railroad lines leading to Auschwitz. How many lives could have been saved? How many more Jews there could have been in the world? Remember what happened in 43, the March of the Rabbis, how many times I've spoken about it, what I've written about. It changed the Rav's entire thinking, his entire hashkafa. We had no power, nothing we could do. I always tell people, imagine we could have gone into the Warsaw Ghetto, what we could have accomplished, but there was no way. I said, thank God today with Russia, with all the difficulty, we have American passports, an American identity. We're not going to lose our lives there. We may be beaten up. That was the shaila that we asked of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, people I wanted to send, asked me what's the worst thing that happened. The worst thing that happened is a few of our shluchim were beaten up by the KGB, by hooliganim, using a Russian word that you will recognize. But no one went, no one didn't get out. And Rav Shlomo Zalman ruled, go. Don't turn Rakefet down. Accept the challenge. And this is the second part of being a Jew. Never forget it. We're not Gentiles. We have a unique concept. We function, we live, and are responsible on two levels. All right, with that being said, I'll show you next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, a slight, how would I say it in English, a shadow, a reflection of this concept in a very innocent, interesting halacha. And what's amazing about Rav Menashe Klein, the sheilot he got are second to none. Herbie, what did you want to say?
You mentioned about heritage of our leaders,
Kahol Ravan,
Benny Gantz's family,
Salman. Of course, I told you that. Baruch HaTodem El Cholam
Shkabu.
Worse than that.
Bibi's original name is Malinowski.
He comes from a big rabbinic family.
Exactly.
But 1 second. Gantz, I told you more than once, his, of the survivors from his family, his parents came in Aliyah. They were Mizrachiites. He received Torah education till about the 10th grade.
What happened?
We don't know how to be Mechanech. That's what happened. What happened to Bigman that he can say what he said and they publish it yet? Published. Don't realize this is pure apikorsit of the most damaging level for the state of Israel. For we as Torah Jews in the state of Israel, we have failed in our chinuch. I'm proud. My Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, asked this very question in a Yorkshire drasha in 1956. For me to repeat the drasha now would take a few hours, but I know every word of the drasha. Okay, changed my whole life. Baruch Hashem. What did you want to say, Michael?
What choice did the German and Russian Jews have? Except
the that's exactly why we went in Aliyah. Let me tell you something. In the war in 82, which I have a battle ribbon from, my unit reached Damur, right outside of Beirut. We found 12, 14 Jews there within 48 hours or even less. They were in Kfar Chabad. Were they Lebanese or Syrian or were they Jews? You follow? This is the concept. Amcha Beit Yisrael. And you have no idea. Quickly, the Shin Bet got involved. Security, Mossad. No, they're Jews. Chabad said, we're ready. bring them to Kfar Chabad. We move them through our lines back to Israel, back. This is the difference. Thank God. That's why we're here. That's why we have an army. That's why we care about Jews being attacked all over the world. We open up our mouths. This is why we put the fortune of money into helping Jews all over the world. This is Amcha Beit Yisrael.
Meanwhile, we don't care about Jews. Stay on. We're getting bombed.
Yitzchak, you're a right winger. I'm a right winger. You're preaching to the church choir. But as many have said, Netanyahu will answer you. Masha'arim mikan, lo remisham. But leave that for another time. And we go into the voting booth. Vote properly. That's all I can say. Correctly.
And probably the sad reality is that if Hitler's policies would have been different, and he wouldn't have been who he was, Jews would have fought in the German army against the French and the Russians again.
I'll tell you even better. When we were growing up, remember the big debate, red or dead? Remember that? Red or dead? There was a whole article, Normie Lamb, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb did a whole article on one of the early issues of tradition. And I always said, take a look, if America goes to war against Russia, who are we going to be killing? The Jews in Moscow. Moscow has hundreds of thousands of Jews. So you're absolutely right. Thank God we're in Israel today. Tzva Haganah Yisrael. And Chaim, let me tell you, what a creation, Tzva Haganah, that Jews can take orders. That my grandson, do you know what once happened? My wife is taking a course, she had to take an exam in Tel Aviv, a librarian, and my son-in-law gave her a lift in his army car with his driver. He was a high-ranking officer. So at the leaving Jerusalem, there's a place where the soldiers worked for lifts. So my son-in-law pops out of the car to find out who's going to Tel HaShomer. He can give them a lift door-to-door. And when he pops out, my wife almost faints. They're all saluting him. And I said, do you know what you saw? That a Jew can salute another Jew? This is a miracle. Because I'm Sheyorah. Every Jew knows more than the other Jew. Every Jew is smarter than the other Jew. What rabbis go through, I can tell you, rabbis were in shuls for many years. They just threw them out. Just now, something happened. A rabbi I know. Another rabbi I know. He's not alive. He died from the Atmos Nefesh. What he did for that Jew, Tufrim. Threw them out. Rabbis, God have mercy, to run an army and to have a chain of command, this is mamish, one of the reasons we have to say hallel on Yom HaTzmut. So to reiterate, we're dealing, Michael, don't leave, I have something for your wife, one second. We're dealing with today, we continue to Rabbi Moshe, Avigdor, Rabbi Avigdor Miller. With all due respect, I don't agree, but that's one of the criticism against Rabbi Avigdor Miller, that he's too sharp, he's too extreme. There's a lot more to be said on that topic, and you see the way Rabbi Moshe handles it. And then we dealt with the horse race, that with the English, Balaz, and I know as a fact that I can tell you that he had a command of English. How do I know? Because I once wanted to meet Rabbi Menashe Klein. I'm very enthralled by him, and he was gone. He's not alive. So I went online, and there's a video of Rabbi Menashe Klein meeting with a whole group of Israeli Balei Tshuva in Ramat, in the shul that Eli Wiesel built for him, where his son is now the rabbi. And he's speaking to them in Hebrew. But his Hebrew is not as good as his English. And when he has a word, he doesn't know the Hebrew, he says it in English. You follow me, Elliot? Why in English? Because Yiddish no one understands today. And the fellas fill him in with the word in Hebrew for the English word. But I saw that he has a very good, if not a perfect, command of English. And it comes across. And here you see it in his Tshuvat. Okay. Where do we go from here? I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shiur for all the other shiurim being given within the radius of 1,000 miles from here, or for all the beans in China, or all the hummus and falafel in the state of Israel. Tomorrow, you'll see what we're doing with the testimony with Solomon Goldman. Then we'll go to a place of silver, and it's Baruch Hashem. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I'm able to uncover this and put it together properly. Now, the freebies. First of all, I just want to mention, this is hanging downstairs in the Beis Medrash. Book launch, a talk at the OU Center Thursday, November 28th, Thanksgiving Day at 7:30 p.m. I don't think turkey is being served, but to bring your own turkey for after the talk. The Class of 1960 Revisited, Who Was the Rav? And that will be the main topic. I have more that I will touch upon, all dealing with YU. The subtitle should have been, but they felt people don't want to read so much, The History of YU Revisited. So I have a lot to say in revealing a document that I have never revealed before at that public talk. Once again, Jack, please resend to Yomo what you sent me. It never arrived. That's a miracle. The article. Yeah, Yomo. You have it? Yomo613 at gmail.com.
That means that Yomo has to print it all out.
That's his job. That's what Sherry used to do for me. Don't worry about Yomo. Rabbi Miller made him officially part of the administration. Kolzman Sherry is gone to help poor Aaron Rakefet. Got it? So Yomo's happy. The Rebbe's happy. And I hope when Sherry gets back, we can see it fixed. Because to have an institution where you can't reach them by email, and no one gives a hoot. And why are you in America? They don't know we exist. We only exist to register students. You understand what I'm saying? Outside of that, we do not exist. Why you in America has a survey. I don't know what the heck that means. That works for 1,000 universities. They couldn't care less. These stupid idiots up in Washington Heights have a branch in Israel. They're going to worry. And then you got the time conflict. It's like people want to die. If certain matters are serious, I can never talk to the people. When I'm awake, they're asleep. When they're awake, I'm asleep. Anyway, if anyone wants, I love this picture. Even if it's not real, I can't get over it. The Israeli soldiers in the photo are the granddaughters of the four women at the front line at a Nazi concentration camp. Okay, if anyone wants a copy. Yeah, by the way, all this is up for grabs. Here is two copies. If this is true, gentlemen, you won't sleep at night. The problem is it's by Michael Oren, Michael Bornstein, who I sent to Russia, one of my shluchim, who only became the ambassador to the United States. The coming Middle East conflagration. One copy. What'd you say?
Pre-apocalyptic article.
You know what I'm talking about. This, Michael, is for you, for your wife.
Thank you.
This, if anyone wants, everyone is talking about the article. I'm very proud to say that Friday night I said to my wife, this article is fantastic. I went online, Motzoi Shabbos, to see if we're still alive, and all they're talking about is this article. That is the Gera rebel who just established the new Gera Hasidut. I happen to know him personally. It's Reb Shol Alta. And it's a beautiful article. This publication is very interesting. It's a Hasidic publication geared for religious Zionists. It's a whole new development on the Israeli scene. This is for Yitzchak Rubin. Chaim, take this. Herbie, take this for your grandson. Pass this back to Herbie Maltz. Now, does anyone know where Vic Geller is today? Elliot, are you in that area? Where did you come from?
Vic
Snow.
No, he said his sister is.
What do you say, Dom?
Lush.
Where is Vic?
His sister is here from America, so I assume he's with them.
Okay, everything is okay.
Yeah, okay.
Good. Okay, I want to thank everyone for their participation. Once again, I want to welcome Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark. I can't think of all those titles. How come when I knew you as a student, you didn't have any titles? You were just Mark. But all right, life's on. But let me tell you, Mark, with all the titles, the only one that counts is Mark. You understand? It's like people say to me, can I call you Arnie? I say, my greatest honor is to be called Arnie. It shows how long we know each other, how far we go back. Gentlemen, tomorrow.
That's what I called you when I first came here.
Yeah, that's all you to call me, Herbie. We know each other from 62 on. And till we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Thank you very, very much. If anyone wants anything, it's up for grabs.
Yes.
Remember, I've always been fascinated how many men could be for one person.